Hello and welcome to this episode of the Rangers Rundown, the only podcast on the internet that properly shows respect for Father's Day. I am Max, and I'm joined tonight by Hayden.
Hello.
And in continued respect to Father's Day, Mike will not be joining us this evening as he's apparently too busy being somewhere tropical, enjoying himself, doing all sorts of terrible, terrible things.
Well, I'll just... It's, you know, in his face, I've been enjoying myself watching Isaiah kind of fall off a catch and Sin Choo Choo walk and the Rangers winning. So, yeah. Really, you got to wonder who's winning here.
Mike is being punished for his shameful lack of dedication to an internet podcast hosted by two people he's never met before.
I mean, you know, it's life has
you reap what you sow.
That's right.
But yeah, no, it's been a fun little run. I mean, I know Team Tank, we're supposed to be written for losses, but the seven losses we rattled off in a row before winning five games, that sort of made up for it. And It's fun to win. I like it. It's been entertaining. We've had some, you know, some great winning pitchers in here, like Jesse Chavez and Austin Bibbins-Dirks.
The stars of tomorrow. Yeah.
Bartolo Colon and Cole Hamels. All the important guys are really coming through in the clutch here.
But yeah, winning is actually fun. I did find myself, I watched the entire game yesterday, being Wednesday, the last game that they played, with the ABD getting the win despite not striking anybody out and all that victory stuff that happened. And I was really excited about it, and there were good at-bats, and there were kind of clutch moments, and people coming through, and it was a competitive game, and we won, and it felt good to, you know, come out on the other end of that with a victory. And then I thought, I am a terrible Tank fan, because now that I have tasted just pure victory, just like pure deserved victory that was aesthetically pleasing, you know, I missed it. Like, I do admit, I do confess, I do prefer winning to losing, despite what I'd thought for the first couple months of this season.
Yeah. No, it's. I've talked about it before. It's really, really hard when you're watching a game to root for your team to lose. Like, some people can do that, apparently, and I don't really have that ability. I don't really mind. I can justify when we're losing. I'm like, yeah, well, yeah, Bobby Witt Jr. We're closing in, but I get too caught up in the game. I'm just too much of a fan of the Rangers and of baseball in general to not pull for whichever team I want to be pulling for. So it's been a fun little run. Hopefully we start dropping some games again soon. We're kind of mixing it up. I've talked for a while that the best way to do the tanking is to win games from good teams because it pisses them off, and then lose games to bad teams because it helps your draft standing. Like, everyone knows that, but I can at least justify picking up a win here or two off teams like the Yankees or Houston and then dropping some games. But in this case, Colorado is well ahead of us, so it doesn't hurt us to take some games from them. You know, we're not just, you know, risking draft picks here or there. And Kansas City is so far ahead of us in terms of being terrible that I don't think we're really risking anything by sweeping the poor, hapless Royals. I was listening to the Effectively Wild podcast, Ben Lindbergh and Jeff Sullivan, and they had a listener question that was about managers who are older in years than their teams have victories in a season, which was fun. I mean, it was an easy answer because Connie Mack coached until he was like 87, I think. But there are two coaches who are in line. I keep saying coach, and I mean manager, but whatever. Close enough. There are two guys who are in line to do that for their teams this year, and I think it's kind of a neat thing to look at because one of them is Ned Yost with Kansas City. He'll be 63 this year, and the other is beloved Buck Showalter with Baltimore. And Hayden, do you know how bad those two teams are?
Very, 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 very embarrassingly bad.
Would you, if I gave you a winning percentage for, let's say, either team at 300, would you take the over or the under?
3 out of 10 games, 30%, 160. Under.
Yep. For both.
That is pitiful.
So a 300 team is a team that wins 49 games, I think. You can't be exactly 300.
Oh, my gosh.
So to be above a 30% is to win 49 games. Both teams are on pace to win fewer than that. Yost, who is 63, is currently managing a team on pace to win 48 games. And 48. Showalter's Yankees. Orioles are on pace for 47.
The Yankees have 50, right? The Yankees are 50-22, and the other teams are obviously doing very well as well.
But Houston and Boston also both have 50 wins, I think.
And we're not even at the halfway point.
Nope.
Oh, man. Well, here, at least as somebody who's a fan of team chaos and just team ridiculousness and gaudy numbers, sometimes even at my own expense and the Rangers' expense, we will be treated in the fact that one of the best teams in all of baseball is going to win the American League East, and one of the worst teams that we have ever seen is going to lose the American League East. So I would love to know what the odds are as far as like the how many games back do the Orioles end up behind either the Yankees or the Red Sox at the very end of the season. It's got to be projected to be 50.
What do you think the record is for most games back? We're going to get in competition for it. I mean, the Yankees should be a 100-plus win team, and Baltimore should be a 100-plus loss. And Baltimore is right now flirting with being a 110-loss team and more.
So, fortunately, I was on the Rangers baseball reference page as a franchise just right now. In 1963, as the Senators, they finished 48.5 games back.
Is that good?
That's not
close,
very
good. Right? Yeah. There's a lot of games in baseball, so being 4.5 out is not that bad, you know?
Make that up quickly. but actually, to bring it real close to home, the 2001 Rangers, you know.
Ouch.
They finished 43 games out. So that's pretty recent.
2001 is that crazy Mariners year, right? That's Ichiro's first year where they won like 110 games or whatever.
I think it was 121. I think. Let me check. 116.
116. Dang. That's incredible.
Rangers did a very, you know, below average job that year. They went 73-89, but they don't deserve to finish 43 games out. Shoot, the A's that season won 102 games and finished 14 games out of first place.
Oh, wow.
At least the wild card
was. And the crazy thing for me about these two teams in terms of Baltimore and Kansas City, who are abysmal teams, these are like truly horrible, horrendous, terrible, awful, no good, very bad teams. And they both have a player that they're going to trade in the next month who is their best or second best player. I mean, the Orioles are going to have to move Manny Machado, who is by far their best hitter. And the Royals are probably looking to trade Mike Moustakas. He's a rental. He should be relatively affordable for teams that want third base help. He's going to at least help depress the Adrian Beltre market and maybe even the Machado market, depending on if teams want him as a shortstop or as a third baseman. And Baltimore's probably to start moving some relievers. I still think still have a couple of guys in the pen who might get things back. They're going to probably want to see what Zach Britton can pull them whenever he's good to go, and then Brad Brack might get traded as well. Off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you if Kansas City has. I mean, they've already traded Kelvin Herrera. I don't know if anyone else in that bullpen is really a trade candidate, but Herrera was having a very, very effective season, a really, really solid one. His peripherals are not as strong as his results, but his results have been incredible. His ERA plus is 402.
Ooh.
That's pretty good.
All right.
These teams are just going to get worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you really get worse from a 48 and a 47 win pace? The answer is stay tuned.
Apparently. Like science says that it is possible.
Hold my beer.
Yeah.
We're going to find out.
Last note on these truly, like, we have to really read through some thesauruses. And find really good adjectives for this because
they're remarkably terrible.
It is unbelievable. I mean, even like the Devil Rays. I'm looking at 2001, so the Devil Rays are at the height of their being useless. They won 62 games, 62 and 100. The Kansas City Royals were 65 and 97. Really darn bad.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of embarrassing, but not even close to this. They would still beat these current teams by 20 games. Nearly. That's insane. But last point I want to make. Again, fan of Team Chaos and ridiculousness. It will be August 1st, and Manny Machado will be on the Orioles.
Oh man, they really might though.
They're gonna play a game of chicken. I mean, teams know that they have to move him, so they're gonna lowball him, and they're gonna play a game of chicken, and they're gonna lose, and they're just gonna say, "Oh well, you know what? We're gonna hold out for these prospects." It's gonna turn to 3 o'clock, and those prospects will not be offered, and the Orioles will not blink because, I don't know, their fax machine didn't work or something. And then Machado will end the season, and they will get a comp pick in next year's draft, and that will be what they have left to show for it.
They're gonna sack Britain all over again. They're gonna wait and wait and wait and wait, and then just never actually do the thing.
I was about to say the exact same thing, just like Zach Britton standing in Toronto, just watching from beyond the fence.
You know, I'm not even by any stretch of the imagination an Orioles fan, and that physically hurt me, watching Zach Britton just stand there watching his team lose.
Ugh. And he put up like a Cy Young season from a closer, which is incredible.
It was a nutso season.
And then, of course, when it's like, okay, now we should finally trade Zach Britton, he tears his freaking Achilles. Like,
mm-hmm.
Baltimore going to Baltimore.
They're going to Baltimore really hard.
Yeah,
they're not going to Baltimore as hard as Kansas City. Kansas City against us this series. I mean, say what you will about the quality of watching two pretty miserable baseball teams go to town on each other. And by that, I really mean just Texas beating up Kansas City for three games. That was fun. We got to see some solid pitching. Bartolo got his record, most wins for a Dominican-born pitcher, surpassing Marichal. He's just a few wins out from Dennis Martinez, who I believe holds the record for Latin-born wins. Martinez ended up winning 245, so Colon is, I think, one win behind him in terms of a tie and two wins out from passing. Is that right? It was 244?
Yeah.
So, I mean, pitcher wins are silly, but it's still a thing, and it's kind of a fun thing. I mean, Martinez did not need 4,000 years and 8,000 starts to do this, but the longevity of Bartolo Colon is something to be celebrated nonetheless. And I know I'm going to be pulling for him to pick one of those things up, because it's not going to kill us to throw Bartolo Colon a couple of wins here or there.
No, it took him forever to finally pass.
He's been stuck on it for a while.
Yeah, it's been cool to see like Juan Marichal's picture or video clips in the broadcast for the last month and a half, because that's a really important part of the game. It's kind of, I mean, it's not recent at all, so it's good to have that connection with the past, but I'm glad that we can finally keep that in the past, because Colon was stuck on 243 for a really long time. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like I knew who Juan Marichal was, of course. I've seen the name and I've read about him, but I hadn't seen... I'm not sure that I'd ever seen video of him before this season. And that, like, wacky leg kick he had is just incredible. I want to see more really, really crazy deliveries, because they're fun to me. I want to see more throwbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who was the guy the Rangers had just a couple years ago?
Ollendorf?
Ross Ollendorf with the incredible, super old-timey windup. It's something I like about Daniel Mengden with Oakland. He's got the Raleigh Fingers mustache, but he also has the big, deliberate, full, like, triple pump wind. I don't know. They're silly, and they don't really do anything, but I kind of like watching them. It's a nice connection to a weird old part of the sport.
Mm-hmm. Every time I see Marichal, I want to go down, like, a little rabbit hole real quick, because that's what this podcast can be. Yeah. Every time I think of Marichal, I think back to like middle school. I have a friend of mine who is real connected to baseball history, and I'm thankful for that, because it's obviously a beautiful game that's existed for decades. But So he knew about all of these old players that you maybe have only heard of in passing, or like, and when you're looking at an all-time leaders list, but you don't really know anything about him. But that was my first exposure to Juan Marichal. He told me about him, and he told me in particular about this one game that he pitched against. It was Warren Spahn. Mm-hmm. It was a 16-inning game on July 2nd, 1963. Both pitchers pitched complete games, and it ended up in a 1-0 victory for Juan Marichal. 16 innings, a double complete game. So Spahn went 15 and a third, and Marichal went 16 innings.
I mean, 16 innings could, in theory, be two complete games. Like, that's two complete game losses.
Yeah. And
that's
shutouts.
Incredible. Yeah, that's nuts.
So I've always, like, that was my first introduction to Juan Marichal, and so I've just always held him with a very high degree of respect. Of, like, he went toe to toe in an all time game, and I mean, he won, but that isn't even what's important. He just was there and made history in a superhuman way. So, hat tip to Marichal.
That just reminds me of another little vignette I heard, also on Effectively Wild, a very fun podcast, if you're in the market for more baseball listening, about the 4-0 no-hitter loss sustained
Pedro,
by...
Pedro, right?
Yeah, Pedro had one as well. I think he lost his in extras. Andy Hawkins is the guy I'm thinking of. He was a Yankees pitcher who threw a no-hitter and lost 4-0, which... it's pretty great. And these little, like, weird, super odd baseball things are very fun. Effectively Wild brought up in the context of an interview with former MLB crew chief, Empire crew chief Dale Scott, just talking about, like, how you can't predict the weird stuff that might happen in any given baseball game. It was sort of a fun thing to be reminded of and a fun thing to think about. So what we're talking about this winning streak, losing streak that we were mentioning earlier, and just started discussing some teams that are that maybe allow us as Rangers fans to be thankful for something. I was taking a look at the Colorado Rockies, who are a middling team in terms of overall record. They've kind of floundered a little bit. They've been getting some pretty truly poor play from one Ian Desmond, who I know is near and dear to your heart, Hayden.
Yeah. We can just gloss over that.
I really liked him as a Ranger. I like him as a person. He's been very bad this year.
I'll tell you what, too, is a thought on Ian Desmond is that he was excellent for... that was 2016, right? He was excellent for the first half, and he was on pace to have a 30-30 season. I remember this because I was gushing over him. And if you look at from All-Star break on in that season where, you know, it was his rebound season, All-Star break on was very concerning. And so the fact that he was able to just go into Denver and just say, don't worry about splits, don't worry about trends, just look, I hit like 20-something home runs and was a good center fielder, I can play first base for $70 million. It's honestly like a magic trick. But anyways, I see him through true lens, but I just want the best for him.
Yeah, and I think the best for him right now, and the best for the Colorado Rockies at least, would be to reduce his playing time and see if you can't make something click. So I was just taking a look at his page. I was looking at the Rockies because I knew that we could pull up some stat and I could poke you with it. And Ian Desmond has been worth negative 0.7 BWAR this season, which is pretty bad. But it's not the worst for full-time possession players on the Colorado Rockies. And so I asked you in precast, and you could not guess who this person was, because I would never have guessed who this person was. According to Baseball Reference, the worst Colorado Rocky this season. You want to try another guess?
Well, and I'm thinking, like, is it a meltdown scenario in Denver? Is it Charlie Blackmon?
It's Charlie Blackmon.
No.
Negative 0.8.
No, oh man,
it's like he's actually hitting well much worse than he was the last 2 years. He's got an OPS plus of 112. He's got a 277 358 486 line, so his power is down a ton. Like, he slugged over 600 last year, and he slugged 550 the year before that, and it's less than 500 now, which is pretty bad. And his OBP is down about 40 points, and his batting average is down about 60 points, which those are all rough. He's still an above average hitter, but apparently, Baseball Reference at least, absolutely hates his defense. He's been a roughly replacement level defender the last couple of seasons. Negative -2 in D-WAR.
Wow. No, he was pretty terrible in that series versus the Rangers. You can't hide somebody in center field.
Yeah, Fangraphs actually has him at being positive 0.7 wins above replacement. I think they're generally speaking, B-WAR talks about what's happened, and F-WAR is a little bit more predictive or prospective. They think he's going to be a positive player. They think that his trends point to him being an above-average player. They've got his WRC plus at 114, which is, again, way down from the last year's 131 and 141 in 16 and 17. But B-WAR also thinks he's a bad base runner now. He's been a 2 to 3.5 base runs guy, and now he's at negative 0.7. His offense is obviously tanked, and then they have him as being a negative 7.1 runs defender.
They
really like Charlie Blackman, and
he's got a great nickname too.
Really likes Charlie Blackman. She took him in. I think he was her first fantasy pick a couple of years back,
and
she'll
stick with you.
Yeah, she's been riding that in our dynasty league. But wow, I would not have guessed that Charlie Blackman was having a bad year.
Oh, that's so terrible. I mean, he's 31. And preface this to the listener, if you don't know, not only is this bad because Charlie Blackman he got MVP votes last season and was a catalyst for a team that went to the playoffs, but they also extended him earlier this season with a 5-year, $94 million contract. The last 2 years of that are player options, so you can guarantee he's going to be opting into those. So he won't be a free agent until 2024. If he's fallen off a cliff, that's very bad, because you would hope that happens in 2023, not 2018. But anyways, I mean, if you look at his age, I mean,
he turns 32 in 10 days.
Right. So that's part of it. Obviously, you can't make all of your decisions based off of that. But yeah, I mean, if his splits last year between Coors and on the road were actually alarming, extremely alarming, and I get the Rockies wanting to lock a guy up that wants to be there. It's the face of the franchise, premium position. Obviously, he's iconic with his hair and beard and just his overall vibe. Mm-hmm. But that is a bad decision.
Yeah.
Was he going to be a free agent at the end of the season? I think he was.
I think so. I think they bought out 1 year. Well, and actually, though, this is a great transition here, Hayden. In terms of signing aging players to interesting contracts, I think Charlie Blackman's a really good thing I've got to talk about in terms of this thing, because Charlie Blackman is a dude who gets the absolute most of his game through his just crazy balls-to-the-wall athleticism and drive. Blackman, he's a good baseball player, very clearly. But one of the things that's really always a thing about Charlie Blackman since he was a sort of a fringe nobody prospect is that he's fast and he's athletic, and then he just maximizes that stuff. And he turned himself into a good center fielder, despite not sort of being a prototypical, I think, star center. If you were to build one in a lab, it would not look like Charlie Blackman. It would look like Lewis Brinson or something. I mean, even Byron Buxton. You're talking about a 6'4" gazelle who's just running around out there and doing crazy stuff. And Blackman's not really that guy, and he's a bit of a grinder, which is the wrong word to apply to somebody who's that good and is that athletic, but he's turning 32, and athleticism is the first thing to go, and his, like you said, his splits are always very troubling outside of Coors. And where I think that's an interesting contrast then is talking about the Rangers' decision to sign Shin-Soo Chu to that big deal, where, you know, Chu has been not super productive for Texas. He's been hurt a bunch. But when we signed him after 2013, I was very excited, because the one thing that Chu does, to the exclusion of everything else, like his absolute overwhelming trait, is he takes walks. He just gets on base. And Texas had not had a guy like that. We had some good hitters. We had some good players. But we didn't have a dude who had posted, I mean, his OBP that last year with Cincinnati was .423. Mm-hmm. That's incredible. It was a phenomenal season.
I remember I have a very specific memory of being in a parking garage at Baylor when I learned that we signed him, and I looked up his on-base percentage, and I was like thinking that it was a mistake. It was a typo. Like we're getting a guy that, like, yeah. Are you kidding me? 43% of the time he gets on base. We're winning the freaking World Series.
I believe when the Chu news came through, I was in a like a world market with my wife and in-laws, or maybe my family, and they're all shopping for something, and I'm just sitting there furiously going through Lone Star Ball's comment sections, being like, yeah. I had this guy on my fantasy team, he's so good, and I was really excited to get Shin-Soo Chu. Now, it turns out that was a kind of a career season for him. He doesn't have good a lot him. Of... he got paid. But we're seeing right now Shin-Soo Chu again. I mean, he's healthy. We don't know of any injuries. He's had these little things on and off. Obviously, he missed most of 2016. He was hurt a little bit in 2014, his first year here. 15 and 17 were quote-unquote full seasons, but I think it came out during and then especially after the season that Chu was going through like all sorts of little weird things. Like he had, I think it was like a wrist problem here and a back issue there and a hamstring. Like it was all sorts of stuff. Shin-Soo Chu, we talked about, he's just insanely locked in right now. Just bonkers. And, you were talking about it in one of our discussions of the last week.
I'm always talking about it.
It's constant. Like, if there's a thing that you can predict in Rangers Rundown, non-pod communication, it's Hayden talking about Shin-Soo Chu and me talking about Carlos Tucci. Like, that's it. It's like 100%. But you talked about his like old man skills. I mean, you want to like rehash that conversation?
I think that it's really important. Okay. Huge caveat is obviously the Rangers have not, the last five or so years, it's not worked out like you would have hoped that it would. Prince's neck stopped working. All of our pitchers' heads fell off. Derek Holland tripped over his dog, etc. Like, things didn't work out
well. Enormous finger quotes.
Yeah. So, that all being said, I think that does paint a really large cloud of kind of pessimism and negativity over Chu in his experience with the Rangers. Like, he got here, he was supposed to... I mean, he got... What was his contract? It's 7 years and $130 million. Ridiculous money. Not something that we really hand out to an individual player, kind of as a franchise philosophy ever since the whole Alex Rodriguez thing happened. But anyways, superstar coming over here, obviously paid to come here and walk 90 feet to first base. And you can say what you will about, you know, whether or not he's overpaid or anything, but John Daniels, and you can look around the league at all of these other aging high profile players, especially guys that were, like, take Albert Pujols, for example, or Jason Hayward, who's not old, but he plays like it. Miguel Cabrera, Josh Hamilton, a whole bunch of these guys that rely on power or, you know, freak athleticism to be the bulk of their value. Whereas Chu is literally, he's a wizard within the batter's box, and he can track every single pitch. He's got great bat to ball skills, and he also has a pretty nice power stroke to go along with it. Nothing crazy. He'll hit you in the 20s and you'll be satisfied with that. So he's what all this is saying is that John Daniels identified a player to give a lot of money to. Probably gave too much money to him. That's beside the point. The fact is that he's still productive. And how old is he? 36? Because he turns 36 in a month. The skill that he has, the skill that John Daniels paid for, is one that ages well. Is that tracking balls, taking walks. You don't have to, you know, your bats. You don't have to worry about your declining bat speed if the bat never leaves your shoulder. So, I mean,
package ages sort of well. Like, I think when we signed Shin-Soo Chu, we knew this was not some sort of fleet-footed center fielder. We weren't signing a guy whose value, like you're just talking about, was predicated on him being an elite defender. I mean, Chu was a laughably bad defender when we signed him. I will remind everybody, he did play center field.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
For Cincinnati in 2013. I like to watch a lot of NL Central games. I have some friends who are big Cubs fans, so I have to keep up with that. But one of my guilty pleasure games, I think I talked about it before, is I love watching Pirates day games. they seem to have a lot of them, and PNC Park is gorgeous. You get great views of the Roberto Clemente Bridge, and I don't know what is. I love the uniforms. I love those like doofy, weird hats that they wear with their like throwback uniforms. I don't know, whatever. So I watched a lot of Reds games just sort of incidentally. Cincy too played center field, and it was, listener, it was real bad. But whatever. When we signed him, we weren't signing a guy who was getting value off being a base dealer. Although he was a good base dealer, he's a good base runner. He's not fast, but he's sort of a smart base runner, and he tries real hard. He was never a good defender, and we knew that. But like you're saying, he can hit for power, and he takes a ton of walks. And I think what we're seeing more and more is that power is no longer degrading the way it used to, like way back in the day. Even as we move past the steroid era, guys are just healthier and they're more fit and they're more like athletically minded in terms of hitting the weight room and managing their diets and keeping themselves fit into their older years. Like, look at Adrian Beltre. That dude's a better athlete at 39 than I have ever been or will ever be. That dude's insane. If you just saw that guy, you would never guess that he's on the tail end of an athletic career. And power has stayed a part of Chu's game. He's been very consistent. You know, in his years with Texas, that first season was 13 home runs in most of a season, and then it was 22 home runs in a full season, and then last year was 22 home runs in a full season, and he's at 13 right now, and I think we're eyeing at a low 20s yet again. I mean, that power has stayed there. He's still getting his home runs, and you're giving them to him, and he's taking his walks. Like you said, say what you will about the total value of the contract, and it's not Chu's fault that the rest of the team kind of fell apart and all died. It's like you said, it's not like his fault that 2014 happened.
Mm-hmm.
2014, whew, man, what a year. But I think we did the right thing overall, and I hope this insane, like, molten hot stretch continues and that Chu finds himself on a contender, and I hope he, like, nails it for somebody down the stretch and is 100% worth whatever his prospect return is. I'm pulling for him. I like Shinsu Chu.
He's
a fun story, and he seems like a good interview, and I really hope he can go out there and just, like, look, his OBP is 388 on the season, and it's 480 during his on-base streak?
Something like that.
I think it was the broadcast said. Almost half of the time over the last, 36 games? Is that what it is? 35 games?
I think it's 34, 33, something like that.
30 plus games, though. He's been on base almost half the time. That's incredible.
Yeah, this is peak Chu, and for a team, for a team that seems to have something always go wrong, this is something that could go very, very, very right.
Yeah.
Because
and look, I'm saying, hey, New York, he doesn't have any facial hair.
True.
You know, you don't have to worry about changing anything. He doesn't have, like, crazy dreads or a weird mustache. Like, he's ready to go.
He's ready to be ready to earn his pinstripes. Let me tell you, though, here's like an actual, close your eyes real quick. Envision how many home runs, how up would Senshu Chu's power play in Yankee Stadium?
That'd be great.
You can just see him. It's so easy for me to just see him connecting on one opposite field, pull side, whatever, and just it goes 375 feet in October, and everybody in New York loves him.
His opposite field power is where I've always been surprised. Like, Chu really whacks the ball to left field, and Yankee Stadium is not good for right-handed hitters and for lefty oppo. But when Chu hits it the opposite way, it goes a ways. And if he starts, you know, yakking some out to the short porch and right, another place that would kind of make sense, and I wish that at some point in sort of prime Chu years we could have had a season, I would have loved to see what Shinsu Chu did in Fenway. Like, just spraying things off the monster and hitting little, like, rinky-dink dingers to right field.
Oh, man, yeah, he would play really well there, too.
Especially when he had a little bit of speed when he was earlier in his career and hitting the things into the corner out there. Fenway seems like a really fun Shinsu Chu park. Fenway is a fun park, like, generally, but it would be a really fun Shinsu Chu park.
He would hit 1,000 doubles off of the green monster.
He just hit nothing but doubles. Just keep spraying them over there. Ichiro. Yeah. Man, Ichiro should have been a Red Sox at some point. That would have been cool.
That too. Yeah. Speaking of doubles, though, and this is, I should have researched this, but we're obviously off script a little bit.
Yeah.
I was listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast, as I'm one to do, and Buster only brought up how I don't even remember the player. Somebody in the National League, I think.
This is how's that great for narrowing segment it down. You're off to.
Yeah. All I'm just saying is that there's somebody out there who's on pace to break the doubles record right now, which is like 67. And he was just talking about how that's kind of unique and kind of fun. And, you know, it's not a storied record like home runs or strikeouts or whatever, but doubles, 67 in a season is
Is that Escobar with the Twins?
Yes. Yes, it is. So I was even wrong off on the league. But yeah, it's been a record for like 80-something years. So all you fans of doubles out there that have turned up the volume while we're talking about Fenway Park and stuff, be on the lookout. Start watching those Twins games.
Ooh. Now, Escobar's having a crazy season. I mean, this is a guy who's been sort of I think he was also an effectively wild topic quite recently, but you know, Escobar is a dude who was just a complete nobody for years and years and years. Just utility infielder, just did his thing, played a little bit of short, played some second, played some third, blah, blah, blah. Last year, 100 OPS plus, perfectly average, you know, a 2.34 slash line. And this year it's 300, 350, 577. He decided he just wants to hit for power. Like, he hit 21 home runs last year. He's at 12 this season, so he's on pace for a little bit over that. And he, like you said, he has 32 doubles. It is June 21st, and this man has 32 doubles. Assuming he hasn't doubled tonight. I'm going to go pull that up real quick. Do we have any... are the Twins even playing today? Yes, they played earlier.
Okay.
They played the Red Sox. Come here, MLB.com. Get in my face. Hey.
Oh, man, please be please be in Boston and please have a double on at Fenway.
It was in Minnesota.
Oh.
Yeah, unfortunate. And no doubles. Only Dozier doubled for the Twins today. Escobar went, he went 0-for-1 with a strikeout and was pulled.
Oh, no.
Well,
when you're listening to this, you'll probably...
Hit by pitch, bruised elbow. He's here today. No! Live!
Live so he can break the records. Live. Anyways, that's your Minnesota Twins update. they are technically still alive because nobody in the AL Central wants to actually play baseball this season.
Nah, the Central's really weird. Oh, you know who does want to play baseball, though? While just I'm sitting here looking at sort of leaderboards. Mike Trout, dude. You know, I think it's funny that Trout has felt that, like, you know, I've never led the league in home runs, and maybe that's why people don't know how cool I am. So I'm just going to do that this year, if that's okay with everybody. I'm also going to do everything else I do. He's still on pace to have the best season in baseball history.
Yeah.
Like, if you guys, just folks listening, if you're not watching Mike Trout games, if you're just not watching the Angels because you're like, you know, stop. Watch the Angels. Just watch them. Mike Trout's insane. I read this thing the other day. He has never gone 3 games in a row in his career without reaching base.
Yep. I've been seeing that a lot, too. And on this recent stretch, I think it's like within the last week, he has failed to reach base 7 times. Something ridiculous like that.
7 times total in a week.
Yeah, yeah. And today you got 2 walks and 2 plate appearances.
I was about to pull it up.
Unbelievable. He's walking more than he's striking out. His WRC plus is 213, weighted base on average of 475.
Mike Trout, actually good.
Mike Trout might be the greatest player of all time, and that's not a controversial opinion. There's a fatigue with it, like, oh, you're gonna talk about Mike Trout, or oh, Mike Trout hit 5 home runs this week, big deal, but just the consistency. Again, we keep referencing our podcast that we listen to. Buster only compared him to Hank Aaron, which, first off, pause. Hank Aaron. Okay, next. And just how Hank Aaron just was so consistent every year, hit 40 home runs, 35 home runs, 44 home runs, this, that. And then you look up and you go, oh, shoot, he is the all-time leader in home runs. And that's how we're going to be with Trout. Oh, he just stole his 500th base, and he just hit his 700th home run.
Yeah.
And, you know. Oh, and he's only 33. It's going to be some. It's just.
I mean, the only thing separating Trout from the best player of all time, really, is just
is time.
How long he plays. Yeah. He's only 26 years old. He's only been in the majors for a couple of years now. I mean, I went through those crazy stats a couple episodes ago where I was just talking about his splits and his numbers and his wins above replacement specifically. Like, Trout is, he's having his best season, and it doesn't, of course he is. He's 26. You keep getting better into your late 20s. Like, that's how baseball works. And everyone kind of said, well, yeah, Mike Trout, he's a, you know, 175 OPS plus guy. You know, he's really, really great. That's insane. He's going to stay that way. Hello, y'all. He's only just now turning 26 for 728. Like, these are his best years. He's going to just absolutely break baseball for four seasons. And he's going to do it with a team that's paying 44-year-old Albert Pujols $426 million a season. So.
That's what I'm saying.
Sorry, Mike.
That's what I'm saying. Just.
Shohei being injured right now sucks so much.
It's a huge bummer.
Like, Mike Trout, I mean, screw the Angels, but Mike Trout deserves to be on a great team that's actually giving him players to play with. It's pretty much just him. He's going to start getting bonzed constantly. Yeah. Why would you pitch to Mike Trout? The rest of his team is pretty, I mean, they have Cole Calhoun, for goodness sake.
Oh,
have you seen Cole Calhoun's slash line?
When I checked like 2 weeks ago, his WRC plus was 3, as of a couple of weeks ago.
Well, his OPS plus is currently 15.
Oh my gosh.
He's slashing 156, 203, 206 for a 409 OPS.
Jeez. So, for some context, if you're listening and you don't really know what that WRC plus number is, it's kind of it's a new stat sort of, but basically it's a catch-all for offensive productivity, and if you have 100, then you are league average. So, you know, anything above 100, you're a little bit above average. Anything below, that's how many like percentage points you are below average. So Cole Calhoun having a WRC plus of literally 12.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Means that he is 88% worse than the average baseball player.
Hey, it's trending in the right way.
Yeah, it was 3 a couple days ago. So
here, let me pull up. So let's say it's the 21st. I'll pull up his last week. Hey, you know, over the last week, he's batting .429.
Hey, anything can happen.
He has 7 at-bats.
Well, then never mind.
Yeah, whoops. Yeah, so he's got a .260 WRC plus in that span. Yep. Since the 31st of May, in June then, he's got a .147 WRC plus in 10 plate appearances, listener.
Jeez.
Cole Calhoun stopped playing and has been basically an okay pinch hitter for, you know, 3 weeks. Yeah, Cole Calhoun is real bad. And this Angels team is, like, criminally bad around Mike Trout.
They're tanking like a rock. I really thought that they were going to be a good contender for Houston. Mm-hmm. I loved their offseason getting, like, signing J.D. Drew, or signing Justin Upton. Where, did I just have a stroke?
J.D. Drew.
Oh,
what
wow.
did you say, J.D. Drew?
Okay, so this is what I did. This is what I did. I got to the J in Justin Upton and went on autopilot and then also mixed it with B.J. Upton.
Or with, like, Martinez, maybe? J.D. Martinez? Is that what you're thinking of?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so it was J.D. Martinez. Yeah, I went from, in the span of a synapse firing in my brain, I went from Justin Upton to B.J. Upton to J.D. Martinez to
J.D. Drew. Well, that's, I mean, this needs to stay in. This is good content.
All right. Anyways, I liked their signing.
But you liked
of,
Justin Upton. Okay.
I liked the Justin Upton, you know, them well, re-signing him.
Yeah, they like extended sort of whatever.
Yeah,
they traded for him last year, and they signed him this offseason.
Yeah, it was a good move there. Kinsler is a good trade, which hasn't worked out so well. I think he's
been really good his last month, right?
Yeah, he's turned it around a little bit.
Still below average in the season, but you know.
Yeah, Cozart, I thought was a bargain. He's been sneaky good. Yeah, you don't want to overpay for a career year, but 3 years, $30 million for a guy that can play multiple spots in the infield, you'll take that. Pujols, I mean, can still do something sometimes. I don't know.
Otani. He's hit 12 home runs.
That's not good,
but he does. If you leave him something, he can still put it in the seeds. Right. He's a terrible ball player, but I mean, his OPS plus is at 93. His batting average is .249, and his on base is .285, which is truly garbage. But I mean,
he'll change his scoreboard a couple times.
He'll hit some dingers.
I
think he still is taking good at bats. I mean, he's still doing the things that you talk about on the side, you know, the sort of secondary side, where you're like, yeah, that guy goes to there, he sees a lot of pitches, and it's good for the guys hitting behind him to, you know, see everything the pitcher has. He's not been productive at all, but. He's not been Cole Calhoun, so woo.
Yeah, it's hard to be Cole Calhoun this year. Which we hate the Angels. This is true. Don't really hate players personally, but nah. Cole Calhoun, I'm very on board with Cole Calhoun. Yeah, for sure.
Angels didn't deserve that, and I don't know, something about him annoys me every time I watch him play.
I think it's the way that he wears his pants and his facial hair, something like that.
I don't know. I'm racist against Cole Calhoun, just him.
But, yeah, you can't be racist against Coles because you'll have a hard time rooting for the Rangers going forward.
Mm-hmm. Cole Hamels, doing good things. I hope he gets traded. He's only one off from his career high in hit-by-pitches, which was last season. So, Cole, please stop doing that. Please.
Yeah, and so your obligatory trade deadline update, forthcoming, whatever. We have about 40 days, ish, until the trade deadline, and I'm saying I'm gonna hold out on this. I mean, you don't know how the market's gonna develop. I just think that with the glut of National League teams that can afford to go for it and try to acquire a World Series MVP. Hamels will be traded. Let's put it before the All-Star game. I would like to see it much sooner, but I feel confident about that.
We're seeing the market open up a little bit. I mean, the Herrera trade was probably too early, and the Royals probably did not get enough for him by not really playing that market enough. But that means that, you know, the season has sort of started, and I really hope to see Hamels moved in July. I really hope that we can put together a package for Shinsu Chu pretty soon, capitalize on this incredible streak.
Yep.
But I could see why other teams are like, yeah, he's been hot for a month, whatever. So, I mean, he's a good hitter, though, so everyone should kind of know that. And we're not trying to sell, again, a gold glove center fielder here. We're selling a guy who can just hit straight up. We'll see what we get. I'm looking forward to seeing how that all shakes out. And we're, like we've been saying for a while, we've been looking forward to this. And, you know, the clock is now really kind of ticking.
Yep,
people are doing the scouting work. You know, the draft has cooled down, and scouts are going full bore on dudes like Cole Hamels. And there was some news today about a couple of teams being interested in Beltre. I thought the Phillies was one of them. We'll see.
Yeah, Beltre on the other hand, I would say is a deadline day deal, so that he can choose the best place for him to land.
Yeah, I think he's going to want to go longer. And I think teams are so leery about his medicals, too, that they're going to want to make sure that he's fully back and that he's, you know, he's hit it. I mean, his slash line has been good on the season, but there are some kind of gaps in his play. I mean, his defense at third has been a little up and down, which is very unusual for him. And the power hasn't, you know, shown up yet. It's one of his worst seasons in recent years in terms of advanced stats, although the slash line is... It starts off very pretty with that 302, 357. You know, the power has just not been there yet, and I think people are wanting to see that come back before they commit to him, but I do still fully expect to see him gone in 5 weeks.
Gosh. Which sucks. Go out to the ballpark and watch him, folks.
Please do that. Do it for me. For me. But while you're doing that, you can pull up the Rangers rundown on your commute to... Texas or to Frisco, go watch Jose Trevino while he's down there, because I think he's going to be up with Texas for a long time. I mean, I'm fully back on the Jose Trevino train. Just Father's Day was enough for me.
That was exciting. Jose
Trevino to be a stud. That was pretty. I mean, it was emotional for me, and I never met the guy. Like I couldn't. I could tell you his stats, but I don't know anything about Jose Trevino as a man, as a person. And mm-hmm. that was a really moving interview with Emily Jones after the game. And
yeah.
I wasn't really fully familiar with his story about losing his father and having just had his own first child and then the walk off on Father's Day. That was really, really cool to see.
Special. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, look, this year the Rangers actually did like their dads. We finally stopped losing on Father's Day.
How about that?
I really read Jose Trevino. Go watch him in Frisco. He gives good interviews. He's fun. Definitely pulling for that. But go out there, watch some Rangers. So they should be cheap this year because they're kind of mediocre. And by mediocre, I mean they're pretty terrible. But they're fun. Baseball's good. Watch baseball while it's here. You'll miss it in November.
Yep. Yep.
You'll be all sad in January. Unless you're watching the Venezuelan Winter League somehow, which, I mean, props, but how?
Maybe shout out Venezuela.
Yeah, just straight up. I'm sitting there in, like, February on bootleg streams of the Australian leagues. Like, oh, I got to get my baseball. Oh, boy. I'm scouting out weird local high schools. I'm just wearing trench coats and hanging out in the stands. Like, oh, gotta see it. So,
okay.
Get your baseball in. Yeah. Yes.
Get your baseball in while it's socially acceptable.
Oh, yes. That's the way to do it. That's the stuff I like. Anyway, watch your baseball. Have some fun. Watch these Rangers. We'll be back Monday, bright and early, with yet another episode for everybody to digest while we sneak a couple of zingers in without Mike here to supervise us. But he'll join us again next week. And we should hopefully be having yet another guest on with us in the coming days. So
yeah.
Keep your eyes and ears out for that. And until next time, I think that's about it for us here at the Rangers Rundown. Be well. Go Rangers.
Chew is good.